بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Tani Sad Rahmatullahi says, your progress in Deen is to the extent of your respect and love for your elders. So your elders is from the Sahaba Ikram till your elders. They are all your elders. To the extent that you have love and respect for them, that will be the firmness, that will be the strength of your deen. That means that if there is a deficiency in that regards, in love and respect, then that will impact on your deen. And if that strength is always growing, then the deen will also grow and improve all the time. So now, what's the need for this muhabbat? Is it that, see now, in this age what's going on, is the minds are very much crowded with doubts, stormed with doubts and suspicion. So, because of that suspicion and doubts, then sometimes your roads become blocked, obstructed, because suspicion, doubt. So when we talk like this, then the doubts will come, all right, they want us to serve them. That's what they want. See? So now, when that doubt came in, and if you paid attention to it, so now you will not show that level of regards, mahabbat, respect, you don't show it. Because it lists every day, it lists improve, it lists go on progressing. So we don't have that type of minds to correct our doubts. Correct it or expel it, dispel it, we don't have it. When we don't have that mind to expel and dispel, then there's wrong thoughts to settle in the hearts. So the need to expel and dispel these doubts. Because your strength in deen will depend upon this. What type of respect, what type of love, what type of confidence you have. If you have that level of confidence, respect, and love, then everything is working out. This can be understood in this manner, that when Allah Ta'ala speaks about you're getting a reward, then he starts off with Iman, Inna Levina Aman. When you think about Iman, then it is believing, trusting, confidence, right? It's all that you believe. If you believe, then are you prompted to work? But if you don't have the belief, then what can prompt you to work? You know, all right, Fajr Namaz, and this is the reward for it. But you don't believe it. You heard it, you don't have the conviction. So is there anything that will push you, anything will motivate you and drive you? No, nothing will drive you. So the same here, the level of confidence, respect, trust, muhabbat, etc. you have, then everything falls in place. And as nothing crashes, then everything crashes. So now, the reason why this thing is so important, right? So, a simple illustration for this is, the hadith tells us, openly tells us, Al-mar'u ma'a man ahabba. You will be grouped with people that you love. So, it's your choice now, where and who you wish to be grouped with. You want to be grouped with this class, you want to be grouped with that class. Who you wish to be grouped? See, in deen there is no compulsion. Compulsion, what does it mean? Compulsion means that I can't force you into Islam. you are not in Islam, then I can't force you. That's the meaning of there's no compulsion in deen. But if you are already in Islam, then I should drive you, tell you, remind you, to the extent of my strength and authority, I can push you. I've got an authority over you, I've got some control over you, then I must use my authority and my control to get you to do work. Right? Like in the dunya affairs, you apply the same principle. If the child says, I don't want to go to school, so first the father will try and explain to him, you know, going to school is important, otherwise tomorrow you'll have to be the garden boy. You know? So the father will try, you know, you learn, you educate yourself, you'll get a reliable boy, you'll be a reliable person with a good job. He'll explain you all the virtues or the merits of education. One, two times, three times, sometimes they may just give you something just to motivate you and drive you that you should go to school. But after all the persuasions, you still are bent and not going to go to school. So then the father will pull out the ballot. Now, you go otherwise. Brother Muhammad Sahib says that I developed some saw something in my childhood. I must have been about 9-10 years of age. At that time, my mother was late. So my father seen a hakim or a doctor, but the medicine was too bitter. You know, you take that medicine, the taste of it remains in your mouth the whole day. I know when you were small, right? So we had to take this cod liver oil, right? You like it or you don't like it, you must take that thing. Stand in the queue, take the thing. But you take that thing, right? In the morning, right till the evening, if you burp, you get that thing coming up again. So it's too terrible. Right? It was a good thing to build up your immunity. It was a very good thing. But the smell was too terrible also. Right? But we have to do it. So Muaz says that, no, I know that medicine is too bitter. Right? So my father would have some money, maybe some gold coin or something, what they were using at that time. You take this and I'll give you this. In my mind, I was very reluctant. Well, if I had it my way, I wouldn't have taken it. But I know in my mind, if I'm not going to drink this, I won't get the money, and I may catch it also in the process. So I had to do some bargaining in my mind. The easy bargain is, let me take the thing, otherwise I'll be forced, and I won't get the money as well. I'll lose out both ways. Let me take the thing, and let's carry on with life. So when you see there's no compulsion in deen, then see what we're doing now, we're just looking at some translation and we're going across. So we feel now we can't force the child to madrasa, we can't force him. So we can't hold the right to do it. Like to school, we'll force. Right? If the child is eating something wrong, we'll force him, eating also, it won't allow him to eat the wrong thing, right? He's small and he wants to experiment with cigarettes, you'll force him, you'll hit him, you'll do something, but you will see to it that he doesn't take the stuff. Right? You've got an authority over him, and perhaps the law also will support you, that you have all the right to do it. Unless the law itself is corrupt, then it's a different thing. One Pakistani is living in America, you see. So the father told him to do something. He pulled up his face. Father threatened him. See, I'm going to go back to this now. So now, the American law, they know. So the child says, well, then I will report you to the police. Childline, I'll report you. So now, father knows now what's the predicament. You do this, you phone the childline, then you're present, class. One student here, And he, his uncle now, uncle's wife had just slapped him, gave a shot. So he returned it. The wife slapped him, and he returned the slap. So she went straight to court. He's 7 years in prison. So the law is so difficult, right? So she initiated, and he returned. She took him to court. So the court, normally everywhere internationally now, they rule in favor of the woman, right? So like how we got affirmative action, so they got affirmative for the woman also, let's see. So 7 years in prison. Now the father understood, all right, the son is, this is what he's doing to me, and I won't stand a chance. If he has to report it, I won't stand a chance. So he played cool with the child, you know, you might, darling, and like this, and whatever, until he got him softened. Then, in a week's time, the father said, hey, there's a wedding coming up in Pakistan, you'll have to go. You know, if you want, you can stay, but the rest of the family is leaving. How can he stay at home? In the Pakistani airport, the father said, all right, pick up this bag. No, I'm not going to do it. Father took the bag straight away. Came straight away. So he says, I'll call the police. So go call the police. We say, or maro, keeps up. So that law is corrupt, you see. Now we taking that as a law, that's a system, that's a style. And then at the end, you get a delinquent. He's not with you, not in school, nothing, absolutely. He's jahil, ignorant, sometimes illiterate, you know, completely off. So the child needs a little bit of discipline, he needs it. Like how Luqman Islam is teaching is that like the plant requires the water, right? Without the watering, there's no growth. So the child also requires discipline. I don't say without any reason you should wreck the child, but you have to discipline him. Sometimes you open up your eyes, sometimes you speak a little bit in a stern way. Something has to be meted out, right? Even in this country, you know, now, to discipline the child has become like a criminal offense. So there are ways you can overcome it. Like, you won't give the child a favor. Giving others, you don't give him. But he's asking, just face the wall. Don't move from there. So, you can discipline, but use your mind a little bit. Now, how must I discipline? And don't implicate yourself. How you must do it. But the child needs the discipline. Come what may, he requires the discipline. And otherwise, it's like a wild tree. Tree is wild now. Can that tree be productive? The thing has to be pruned, taken care of, nursed properly, correctly, nurtured properly, then you find the production. But you just left it wild, and you want the production, and look what happened. That happens. So the law is on the side, internationally, it's on the side of the criminal. A simple example I give normally. In Islam, we say that the person that steals, right, theft, and his hand is amputated. So the rest will say, no, this is barbaric. So they did away with that law. And then, with that, if you got the person, then he's got his rights to defend himself. He's got his legal rights. He can't afford it. The state will offer him legal rights. Who? It's a thief, it's a rogue. So he's got legal rights. Right. I mean, he's got legal rights. Now, how long it takes, and what he says to the court, and how he comes out, only Allah knows, right? Now, in the absence of this Islamic law, now what happens? Now, see, look at it. Look at it without any bias. Without the law of Allah Ta'ala, what happens afterwards? Afterwards, every home requires a burglar guard, right? And some will keep dogs, right? Then they'll have a CCTV, then they'll have a patrol, right? Right. Then you have CPF, so many things, just to see that the peace and the security is maintained. Right. But in the presence of an Islamic system, look at the advantage, right? Now, when a person is guilty of theft, so they amputated his right hand. And وَلْيَشْهَدْ أَذَابَهُمَا طَائِفَةٌ مِنَ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ. The law is when you have to punish the person, then advertise it very well. Advertise it. One person lost his hand, but advertise it. In the day of Rasulullah SAW, sometimes it used to be that if the hand is amputated, it used to be hung around the neck. Are you going around? For some days now, that your hand is around the neck. Right. So, you set an example on one person, and you advertise it. Now, they would have televised the whole world see it. So now, they see now he committed this theft, and this is the consequence. Right. So, will you get someone easily going into theft? Will you, is attempting to thief or to steal? You can see what's happening. I'll do this, I'll lose my hand just now. Just I'll do this, and I'll lose my hand. I don't have a chance for hand. So that becomes a deterrent, right? So now, in some countries where Islamic law has been practiced, right, for a long time, every individual felt so secure, so safe. Like up to recently, the Haramain was such, but a woman could leave her flat alone at 1 o'clock in the morning, come and do whatever she wants to do, and go back. And she won't feel any level of insecurity. Now ask me, in any Western country, can a woman feel so secure that she leaves all alone, she comes out? I don't say she must, they must do it, but they'll feel so secure. In any Western country, or even the so-called Muslim country, can you get this? So, when they set an example on one person, the multitudes are living in peace. And when they said it was barbaric, right, and they felt compassionate about the criminal, then the whole public is living in fear. So to save this one criminal, the whole public has to suffer. So I asked, where's the logic? Is there any reasoning in this? He murdered, right? Now, you said, all right, it's a life sentence. In the life sentence, then they'll see now the behavior of the criminal. Behavior is too good, in 1 year's time they send him out of prison, right? Either influence or his behavior is very good, so he doesn't deserve to be in the prison, they send him out. So this type of thing is happening all around the world. You can see it, everybody sees it, right? But they feel, well, the law is manipulated. It's for the criminal, not for the innocent, not for the law-abiding. One is the law-abiding, he has to live in fear. The criminal, he can go free and do whatever. Whilst he's behind bars, they're planning the next crime, they're planning it already. We got caught here now. What was the reason for us getting caught? Let's do the homework properly, you know. Where we slipped. So we slipped here, right? Now we know how to overcome this thing and do this thing. See? So, we are talking now, La ikraha fi deen. There's no compulsion in deen, right? Now, what is the meaning of no compulsion in deen? A man is a non-Muslim, you can't force him into Islam. You will give him one of three options. Either you accept Islam, or you are prepared to accept the Islamic system. Like if you come to South Africa, so when you're writing the documents to be here or to be a citizen, then you will have to sign up some type of a form. You're declaring that you will conform to the law. If you're defiant, they won't give you. They will reject it. So here again, say, all right, you agree to conform to the system. Whatever the system is, you'll agree. Then they'll allow you, and then they won't allow you. So when you say Islam, it means the system of Islam. So you either accept Islam, or you accept the system. Whatever the system requires, you're supposed to be doing it. You, So, you never accepted Islam. You haven't accepted the system. Then, you can't take you as a citizen. Then you are a non-entity. We won't guarantee your safety at all. Because you don't want to come in the system. When you don't come in the system, then what's the aftermath? Aftermath is when everybody is insecure. The whole world will be insecure because you're not coming within the system. If you are agreeing with the system, the whole public is in security. But you don't want to accept the system, then nobody is living in safety. Right? So these are the three options that are given to any person that is coming to an Islamic state. Islam, accept the system. You say jizya, right? Accept the system. That's the khulasa, that's the essence of jizya. And otherwise, then we don't give you any type of assurance. Anybody kills you, we are responsible. Even if we kill you, we are not going to give you any amnesty for whatever. One of the two things. So, when we say no compulsion, that's what it means. No compulsion. That's why, you see, there is the conquest of Makkah Mukarramah, right? So in the conquest of Makkah Mukarramah, then you have three classes of people. Right? One class of people who had violated their contracts. Right? When they violated their contracts, then the Quran said, he told them, Siru fil ardi arba'ata ashur. Giving you a chance for 4 months. You either follow the system properly, otherwise, we'll put you away. فَإِذَنْ سَلَقَ الْأَشْهُرُ الْحُرُمُ فَقْتُلُ الْمُشْرِكِينَ. They will kill you. So, that the wrong now is what's happening now. You get people asking, what's the meaning of this? فَإِذَنْ سَلَقَ الْأَشْهُرُ الْحُرُمُ فَقْتُلُ الْمُشْرِكِينَ. Kill this, the mushriks. It's not like that. It's about the conquest of Makkah Mukarramah, right? And the whole Arabia has come under Islam. So you've got different classes of people. One class of people have violated all the agreements. So these people that have violated, we give them some respite. If you want to come into the system, you come into the system, otherwise we put you away. You already violated. Now, you say violated, how they violated? They went and killed innocent people. These people, Banu Bakr, they had killed innocent people. Right? When they killed innocent people now, if the law is not going to be strong, what's going to happen? Today, they killed these people, so we are lenient with them. Then they killed someone else, then we are lenient with them. Then, what will happen? There will be no law. It will be a lawless country, this thing here. So we said, alright, this one class, you violated, فَإِذَنْ سَلَخَ الْأَشْهُرُ الْحُرُمُ. We're sparing you till the sacred months have ended. That means you came here in Zulqadah, Zulhijjah, right? To do your Hajj. And sacred months will finish up in Muharram. So till Muharram you got chance. After Muharram you see, you look for yourself, then you go. Okay. So that's one class. Then you got another class of people, non-Muslims, who conformed, agreed to all the conditions, all whatever agreements we had with them, they conformed, they respected. So them, for them it's a different law. فَمَسْتَقَامُوا لَكُمْ فَاسْتَقِيمُوا لَهُمْ فَمَسْتَقَامُوا لَكُمْ فَاسْتَقِيمُوا لَهُمْ إِنَّ اللَّهَ يُحِبُّ الْمُتَّقِينَ. So the law for them is different. See, it's for those that violated. فَإِذَنْ سَلَقَ الْأَشْهُرُ الْحُرُمُ فَقْتُ الْمُشْرِكِينَ. Now you take out the circumstance and let's say kill the mushriks. I say, is it right? Have you understood the Qur'an Sharif? Now yes, this second class of مَسْتَقَامُوا لَكُمْ فَاسْتَقِيمُوا لَهُمْ. They had honored and respected the law, so you also respect them. فَمَسْتَقَامُوا لَكُمْ فَاسْتَقِيمُوا لَهُمْ. So they respected the law, they're law-abiding, they're not violating any terms and conditions, so we will respect them as well. See, now, minus the circumstance, and you just go straight into the transition and what a mess you make. Now you get this type of questions coming up. The Quran says you must kill the mushriks. Now, you didn't study tafsir, don't know the reason for the revelation, minus that just one verse and the law. And then you say, no, Islam is so rigid and auzubillah, all these type of comments. Because you didn't study the thing, don't know the thing, what it refers to, and you just come to your own conclusions. Right? Then you got a third class of people. We had some relationship with them, some agreements, right? But we didn't define the period. Alright, see, we have got a peace treaty with you, but we didn't define any period. Right? So there's a third class. So in this third class, what do you do with them? The third class, you'll give them a respite for 4 months. One is those that violated. So then you told them by just the end of the sacred months. Then those that had honored, and they had some terms, right? 2 years or 3 years. So we'll respect them. And then the third one, they had no terms. We just said, all right, you respect the law. But we didn't give them any undertaking that this is the term. This is the term. This whole contract that we have come and entered into, then when does it, to which point it lasts? So then the Quran says to them, all right, you've got a respite, you've got a chance. فَسِيرُوا فِي الْأَرْضِ أَرْبَعَةَ أَشْهُرٍ. You've got a chance to live in peace. Nobody can touch you. Nobody can interfere you. All the rights a Muslim enjoys, you will also enjoy the same rights and privileges. But for how long? For 4 months. See, if you've got enough time now, after that you make up your mind. You come under the law, or then you are mubahud dam, then we are responsible for you. Now see how this thing fits in. So when we talk about no compulsion in deen, understand what it refers to. And that's why I say, looking at translation on your own, independently, really, it's a disservice to the Quran Sharif. Whether it is the Quran, whether it is even the Hadith part, but you're studying it on your own. Now, it becomes like fashionable that you've got Hadith a week. Someone is posting the site, Hadith a week. He's doing a very great thing. The one Hadith is coming to you every week. Now, did you read the whole the circumstance, the reason, and how that hadith had come, where it came? You know, this lockdown period, so there's no school, right? So there are small children running around everywhere, right? Coming from other places for all the day here, from here, they're going elsewhere. So one child, he must have been about 7 or 8 years of age. So he's telling me, Mala. Obviously, with small children, you speak a little bit casually with them. He's telling me, but you can read namaz with just one piece of cloth. Why are you saying we can't wear kurta and topi and all these things here? But we can't read with one cloth. Now, this is a small little child, and he came up with this. So I understood now that where he came from. When you get this hadith, a week post on hadith, he came from that. Someone read that, some adult read that, and explained this to this child. So, now the child has got it. So, a weapon in an immature person's hand. So that's knowledge. The person is not mature. He doesn't have all the parts together, and you gave him a gun. What's going to happen? He's going to create a havoc just now. So, the hadith he used, awa likullikum sawban. The hadith that was taught to this child. Awa likullikum soban. Does every person have 2 pieces of cloth? Now understand what the hadith refer to. The Arabic translation, does everybody possess 2 pieces of cloth? Now, it's a time where they are constrained financially. The constraint is such that they don't have enough clothing to cover themselves in salah. Right? A man and his wife has got one big cloth to cover themselves to do the namaz. And if not, then they can't do namaz. They've got clothing, but it's not sufficient to cover them. So a man would wear the clothing, go to masjid, and after the faras return back home straight, so that his wife could read the namaz. She's got the cloth now, one sheet, she's covered herself, and she could perform namaz. Now at that time, when they were in constraints, they didn't have that financial strength, so there was a relaxation given to them, that you still will read the namaz in the masjid, shoulder to shoulder. Though it is just one cloth. But you will not say, he doesn't have enough clothing, so he's excused from coming to masjid. So you got one cloth, and the cloth is covering your sadr. Right. If it's covering your sadr, then two, you should come to the masjid, perform your namaz, shoulder to shoulder, do it. Now, look at it, this was the hadith explained under this circumstance. Now, this hadith here, you're generalizing it. So, what's wrong in performing namaz in one piece of cloth? So, you're generalizing. Look at the circumstance, and then how you generalize, ask you, is it misconstruing? Is it wrong? Is it a misapplication or not? Is it a disservice to the hadith? Definitely the disservice to the hadith. Then I explain the child now. See, I have to bring it right to his level. I can imagine an 8-9-year-old child and someone brought this to his attention. So he says now, you all are teaching us against the hadith. That's what's coming to his mind. So I have to explain the child. I said, like, see, in the day of Rasulullah Paksan Al-Sun, right, they're living months on end with just dates and water. Sometimes there's 1-2 dates, water, months on end, right. So, because they lived in that day with just dates and water, sometimes 2 dates, 3 dates, for the whole day, right? So, tomorrow, will you announce it to your mother that only dates and water, because Sahabi Kiram only had 8 dates and water? Will you announce it? Then why are you having a selective approach? Here you said only one piece of cloth, all right? But there you said, I must have all. Samosa, tea, biscuit, chocolate, everything was had. There you got a selective approach. And here you got to apply this thing in all, one cloth. So the idea is they want to don't wear the topi, they want to wear the 3-quarter pants, just come to the masjid with a casual outfit, come in the masjid, just bounce few rakats and go out. So then the masjid doesn't have the awe, the majesty, the respect of the masjid. And that's what we're talking about. If I start off here, see, that for the deen to be secure, you need to have that awe, respect, muhabbat, the confidence. And the West was very, very smart in robbing us from that awe, that respect, that muhabbat, that understanding that we had once upon a time. They were very smart in doing it. And they were successful in doing it. But we, like Ullus, we grabbed onto that, it's such a simple thing now. Why? What's this additional thing? Law and respect and mabbat and confidence and all these things. What's the need for that? See how they play. So we fell into their trap, and all their junk we bought. One American woman accepted Islam, right? White American woman, she accepted Islam. Now look at these stories, these two stories, look at it. Colonel Amiruddin, he was responsible. Now they spent some time with him in Jamaat all that, and he made the point that the woman would not talk to any man, including myself, directly. Anything you need to ask, because they knew now, they'll ask now, this invalidates the wuzu, roza, namaz, etc. So they will ask, this is here. You come to your husband, you don't come off directly. So they got the training and they were back home. The woman went back home. And he says, I put into their mind, you don't want to talk directly to a man. So they got some training, alhamdulillah. But after some time, one of the women, they phoned up at about 1 o'clock in the morning. 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning, right? And they can see she's frantic. What a measure, she's crying one day profusely. So, in some countries, public transport is used very broadly, very widely, like London, some places in America. So it's easier and it's more comfortable to go by public transport, so they think. So this woman says that I was in the public transport, right, and that vehicle just jerked. As it jerked, I almost fell, and part of my sleeve just opened up. So my hand was open at the time. Now, will that part of my hand burn in Jahannam? That's the question that she asked. You see, now iman has gone deep into the heart. They've been given the training. See that they have that confidence, that respect, that muhabbat for deen, for Colonel Saab. And then this is that the thing that prompted this woman, that is a brand new woman, to ask this type of a question, that this hand will be roast in Jannah. So he had to explain to her, alright, this was a pure accident, you didn't envisage, you didn't expect this to happen. So Allah Pak will save you, inshallah. So then she's asking now, then how must I save myself for the future? So Khalil Sahib explained to her, alright, in future you have to travel this type of transport, just put an elastic. So that thing will stop the thing from going down. See? Now you see, when there's the respect, when there's muhabbat, there's understanding, you're putting the hadith in the place, right, there's no confusion. But you didn't understand it, you didn't understand where it fits in, where it comes in, just taking a short now. Just taking it. So now you get any type of dress, any type of clothing, any type of person, and he'll feel what I'm doing is right. So our kulli namaz, one piece of cloth. But now, what were the circumstances? We didn't look at all these things here. One woman, she spent the time. See, you're talking about molding. So this takes a lot of time to get the person right, thinking right. It takes a lot of time. And we don't want to do that. What we want to do is just send a message, you must change. It doesn't happen. Molding, spending time, mastura jamaat, whatever. Right? Though it's not the best thing, right? Mastura jamaat. The woman's supposed to be in the house. But how else should be any other way that you can slowly filter the girl or the woman back into the house? Any other way. And it's not a thing to talk about. But the jamaat work started about 62, 63. We were small at the time, right? Schooling, right? I know people, right? The girls were wearing shorts, no scarves. Those girls today are mothers of Mulanas. And Mulanas that are a bit popular. You hear the bayans, all right? But now, if you saw them in the 60s, this boy is going to speak about parda, and she doesn't know what his mother was like. Now, we saw that time, like we were children, we saw that time. This was the change, this was what was their condition, and then the Jamaat came slowly, worked on them. It's a lot of effort that goes behind this thing, not just overnight. They brought them right to this point. So what effort goes into it? So it may not be the ideal thing, but is there any other way that you can get the girl out of the street, out of the office, out of the shop, out of the mall, right? Out of the school, out of the university, out of the secondary school, right? Is there any way that you can take her out and bring her straight into the home? Is there any machine? Show me the machine, we'll tell them, don't go mastura jamaat. But it's nothing else now. So the mastura jamaat, right, if you know how it operates, I think it's an exaggeration myself, because there's more laws there than if you are visiting, for example, you and your wife are visiting your friend's house, right? So it's a little bit of a casual environment. Yeah, it's a very strict environment. So strict the environment is the floor that the women are. No men allowed. You can't even live in one room. Can't move. No men allowed. They're so strict about the whole thing, right? Yeah, you say that this is not right. But then, when they're having weddings and walimas and all that, you're turning a blind eye. Let's see what happens in the walima and the weddings. Right? How much of how much of concern over the Torah? Nothing, absolutely. What we're saying is permissible. There's a need so that she can go to the mall. The shamelessness that goes there. So that is right, and this is wrong. So there's no understanding. There must be a way you can bring it back. Bring it back. The masturat also, they get jacked up all the time. What happened? So one woman will tell husband, this is what happened. The husband will ask. So one responsible person. And they're improving all the time. So because of the circumstance, therefore they bring them into this. And then you see a dramatic change. A woman changes, then the home changes, then the children change. Where that woman is a modern woman, now she's the mother of an alim, of a hafiz. She's teaching Quran Sharif. But you see the change, the metamorphosis, how long it takes. So you want the thing to come straight, it doesn't happen. It's not normal. It's an abnormality. So if you're saying now straight away is not permissible, then that means that woman that is in the street, in the shop, in the office, schooling, university, she must just rot there. She must just rot there. There's no way for it to be out. You get some school teachers coming here, some principals, teachers, and if you hear the stories, pathetic, you know. He says, now we have to be very careful, because as a school teacher, we cannot say these type of things. Take your daughter out of school. Can't say that. It's against the law. So sometimes discreetly we see, hey, it's not right here. Something's not right. We go and warn the parents, you better move her. They won't listen. And shortly after that, you'll find that that girl is pregnant, and she's pregnant with a non-Muslim. He made her pregnant, got the child, and she's vanished, and now she's living with the girl. But where it started from, this you get a principal type of telling you. They go and discreetly warn the person. Right? They can't say it openly because they lose the job. Right? But that's the furthest they could do. What alternative? How must this woman, how must she come out? Must she just go deeper and deeper into immodesty, shamelessness, and irreligiousness? Or is there a way, a slow, gradual procedure to bring her back on course? Is there anything? And that's why I say, in this day, that's the greatest jihad. One is to create an awareness and eagerness, and one is to bring woman back to their place. Understand the function, the attire of a woman, and now to make an effort to bring it back on. That I can't think of anything as great as doing this. People have their own opinions. I'm looking at life, you know. You look at a cross section anywhere, the whole world look at it. But this is where we are, and this is what needs to be done. So we're talking about compulsion. La ikraha fi al-deen. And the explanation to this, like Raha Fiddin. So one is that non-Muslim, or the non-Muslim, we won't force him to accept it, but yes, we'll ask him to conform to the system, to the law. Like how you're living here, then they will ask you to conform to the law. They will ask you also, you've conformed to the system, law. That's what they'll ask you. But the Muslim that is here, living here, we will force him. Rotting namaz, we will force you. We'll make you perform namaz, right? In an Islamic land, we'll force the person. Then you can't say, there's no compulsion in deen. That's not directed to that Muslim. It's directed to this non-Muslim. What's directed to the non-Muslim, you're applying it to a Muslim. It's wrong. Like I showed you, if the child not going to school, you're going to force him. Are you going to do that? If he's not taking that medication, you're going to force him. So you say, oh, but what about my democratic rights? He asked, what about my democracy? It's a land of democracy. Why forcing? So why are you forcing the person to school? If it's his democratic right, why forcing? So those that talk about democracy, they don't understand what they're talking about, right? Now you see, no, it's my democratic right, democracy, right? But look at most of the Western countries. The woman can't dress up like she wants. She wants to veil her face, she can't. Isn't it? So where's the democracy there? If it's democracy and she's got some freedom, then why can't she cover her face then? Or it's the one that is not covering the face, the law is supporting her, giving her the full support. And the one that is not covering the face, then they are forcing. So you see that you must remove it off, must take it off. So they are doing the forcing. And then it's like a thief now, you know. He stole, but he's shouting, catch the thief, catch the thief, catch the thief. But who's the robber? He's the robber. And the innocent person will catch the thief. So there's another woman also in Colonel Misa. You brought a straight speaker. And you need that. It's someone you need to speak straight. So I suppose he had an army background, so he could speak. So he took some other woman, right? Brought them nice and staunch. So they had to have a bayan. They go out for 4 months to India. So they went to Aligarh. Right? And now it's a white woman. She's speaking in the tone. She got the twang. So it feels like that. Substance is not important. The knowledge is not important. The twang is important. They will see the style, the twang and all that. That's what they want to listen to. So you can give an ilmi talk. It doesn't mean much. Yes, you got the twang right, and you got that American accent right, and you got everything right. So they took this jamaat to Aligarh now. And advertised it now. There's an American woman that's going to give a talk here. So the Indian woman came with all their makeup and their lipstick and whatever they could do. They came out. When they heard now that it's an American, so they came in good numbers. A couple of hundreds came. Small house, so many hundreds came in. And this woman let them have it. She started off slowly, built the momentum, and then she says, see, this vomit, you know, that we threw away, you are licking it up. This woman just came in and talked, this, all the makeup, this is a vomit. It's a filth. We threw it away. What we threw away, we vomited, that's what you're licking up. Now she was so hurt, you know. Well, this is dirt, it's filth. Right? And you are adorning yourself, you want the respect because of this. But it's supposed to be thrown, never to be returned. And you using the same things to adorn yourself, to make yourself attractive and a little bit honorable in the sight of people. So see how strong her iman came with. In a few days, you spend in the right company, right talks, right understanding. So that's why I say that this is the jihad. This is the striving. But I say this type of striving takes a lot of time. Right. Under circumstances, what is there any other way? Under the circumstances we're living in now, internationally, is there any other way? If there's another way, show me. And there's no way, then do something to, yesterday I spoke about it, to preserve and propagate, right? It's every Muslim duty. It's not only Murad's duty. Preservation got two sides. Preservation got, one is preserve the word. And number two is preserve the application. It's not just the word and not just the application. Preservation for both. You preserve the word and the application. You ask Qari Sahib now, alright, that this is the makhraj of God now, how it's pronounced. If he only gives you the explanation and doesn't allow you to do the ijra, can you get the thing right? Can you get it right? He'll have to make you recite after it. If he's got the application, now you got it. So preservation means both. Get the word right and get the application right. Then that preservation takes place. Then the second thing is a propagation. Then to the highest level, to the level that you can manage, keep on escalating, right, to the level. So that's the duty of every Muslim. It's not only my duty, not any Hafiz Sahib's duty, not any Mufti Sahib's duty, it's everybody's duty. But as I say, to the extent that you can manage what you know, and to the extent that you can manage nicely, you do it. That should be your fikr. In the morning you're getting up, that's my fikr. What can I do? How must I do it? Obviously for most people, the better thing is to work with mashwara, not independently. Because in the words of Umar Sahib Rahmatullahi, if there's no mashwara, then you'll try and suppress one fitna, and you'll give rise to 10 fitnas. You'll try and suppress one fitna, and it will give rise to 10 fitnas. So if you do your own thing. One person, true himself, personally, right? We're not in Jamaat. So, he must do something. About 1 o'clock in the day now, about 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock, before Zuhar, so 2 hours still for Zuhar Namaz, he must go for Gush. He says, it's not the time, it's a Western country, you don't go for Gush around this time either. No, I must go for Gush. See what's happening here. They're dying as kuffar and all that. He's giving his own report, right? And he came back and he's crying. I've been in Masjid. I've been in that house, there was a girl there, and what happened and all that. We did some things. So, you don't blame the Jamaat for this. Like a child now in the madrasa, if he did the same thing, you blame the madrasa for it. He's in a khanqa, and someone did this thing, there was a miscreant, and he did something, you blame the madrasa for it. You didn't conform to the standard. Well, the standard here, you don't do these things here, you don't leave the madrasa without some authorization, etc., etc. But you do your own thing, you fell into a wrong, but you will not say that Jamaat encourages this type of behavior. You will not say that. See, there's one word, la ikraha fi deen, right? No compulsion in faith. But how much is what? One place in India, so the youngsters just came back from Jamaat. Say, you missed out the Fajr Namaz, you missed out so bad. So they spoke about it. In India, in the summers, then they got the beddings outside. It's too hot, right? So this outside is a little breeze. So the bedding is also so light. One hand you can carry the bedding. If it's outside, and it's sleeping. So they thought they thought themselves independent of the markas. They did their own thing. Let's go and wake everybody up, get them for the Fajr Namaz. Right? They woke them up. Now you know how you wake people up. So you caught him up, so he'll turn from one side to the other side. Before he gets up, all that half an hour, three quarter an hour. So the next day they thought, no, this is taking too long. What we will do is we'll just spray them. We all have sprays. Cold water, spray them up, straight, they will get straight. Instant results will get. See, this is where. What is microwave? What happened? Instant. So they came with sprays, called everybody up. So those youngsters, I think, that are sleeping, hey, we'll put these people in place today. Let them come, let's see. So they came with a spray. These people had the lathis, the sticks under their bed. The moment they came, you see, when you do your own thing, you try to suppress one fitna, and it gives rise to 10 fitnas. So they'll tell you, see, every area, every place has got some responsible people. Sometimes it's a simple thing, they can show you a procedure. Sometimes it's a little bit complicated, they would say, refer you to the markaz. The markaz sometimes can't handle it, they will refer you to the headquarters, India, Pakistan, right? So they give you a direction. Normally, 99% of the time, you follow the procedure, it's just good coming out. There's nothing wrong. But the wrong comes out when you're doing only, you broke away. You thought, no, you're a smart person, and you can break away. And when you broke away, then you have problems. So, la ikraha fi deen, I'm showing you that the Hadith and Quran Sharif have got certain applications, right? It's all gems, precious stones, right? But understand how it applies. And then apply it. Right? Quran Sharif, Hadith, whatever it is, they're all precious, right? But there is a way to apply these things here. If you apply it rightly, it goes right. And you misapply it, then it's your fault. You won't say, what the Quran has said. You won't say that. Allah Maktoufi Mizikara.